information or I would approach it.
Change of attention.
Mm-hmm. How long?
Attention.
Change of intention.
Change of where the attention is.
Okay.
When you feel another different surface. When you feel different surface, change the attention.
So perhaps a number of these have overlapped. That if you change the perception, you'll change the tone.
Mm-hmm. The range of liveness of how alive is the body.
The physiologists sometimes talk about excitability. How excitable the nervous system is and the muscles are.
How alive.
Or how dampened they are.
The how persistent or insistent you are to a thing versus your porousness to adapt.
The difference between listening and doing, which maybe is excitable, sensitive.
Mm-hmm. How many of you have practiced the small dance? Who has not practiced the small dance? Okay, so I think everyone has. So, do you see a connection between the practice of the small dance and this discussion of tone?
Yeah.
How so?
What is the lowest tone I can use to stand?
And not fall down?
Actually, also when you're doing the small dance, you can watch your body modulating the tone on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I find it's I perceive it slightly differently. Maybe that I try to go beyond where I've been when I do the small dance. So there's an intention. Rather than letting something happen, there is an intention, a mind intention to continually saying to the body, let go, and not knowing what will happen, because I might not have felt that sensation before. You know, visit, what if I've been holding something for 5 years and I have never felt what is coming? So there is a volonté, there is an intention to keep releasing.
Mm-hmm. How many of
direction.
You heard, this is related to what you just said, heard that instruction by teachers, release unnecessary tension? It's very common.
Yeah,
well, so in that instruction to release unnecessary tension, it begs the question, what is necessary? You talked about not falling down. But like sometimes you're just like doing something and then you realize you're like holding yourself more than you need to. And you just let it go. You're like, oh, wow, I don't know why I was doing that, but I can just let it go. And then you notice patterns of like where you let it go and then boom, it comes back. And you're like, why does this keep happening? Because I told my body to let go and yet it comes back. Have you experienced that?
Mm-hmm. I had an experience in one of the jams lately that I was really like for long minutes in my small dance, really researching like what is there to let go more and more. Mm-hmm. And towards the end of the jam, a very hot, physically hot, sweating body approached me from the back, and just sensing that heat, something opened up in my back. So something that I was not able by myself was really heightened by the heat that approached me from the back.
And I wanted to say something related to the release tension, which comes from the release techniques.
Yeah.
Discussion.
Yeah.
because for many years they were discussing about what is release techniques, and a lot of people confused all the things about releasing tension, and we were seeing for more than 10 years dances like releasing tension in a way that everyone could understand that in his body. So we were seeing all these things, and they were discussing very much about releasing tension. And then in this discussion came up that, okay, we have to release tension because we follow the natural flow, like the animals, how they move and without making some big effort and things. But sometimes you need to have a big effort, like a turtle that goes in her fourth legs in order to jump and to turn. So that's release station, not release tension, but it's a state that you are following the need of the moment. So you need the tension then. So this changes everything. So when we say release, we don't mean that we release. Like this.
Obviously, and we're all teachers here, and so this comes up over and over and over when people have been told to relax. You're too tense. Relax. I never tell people to relax. Never.
It's enraging. I mean, it's infuriating.
Well, it's just confusing.
Yeah, we were dancing for 10 years like this.
So I guess that's the question. How do you teach people how to modulate the tone? I mean, we mentioned it, but what are some specifics?
For me, with my biotensegrity concept of the body and the fascial web, it's in relationship with the internal comfort, because
it's in relationship to what?
To the internal comfort sensation, because often in osteopathy we meet people who are hyperlax, too lax people, and in fact the fact of to be too much lax, to have a too big laxity, give some discomfort to the person, and they need sometimes to have stronger muscle to feel more comfortable and to have a level of tone which is gives them security. So sometimes the reference of internal comfort is something very precious. Because some people, when they are hyperlax, feel uncomfortable because they don't feel the security inside their body.
And I think it's quite obvious if you look children and if you look babies, you will see that we are coming already with some tonus. That there is a certain energy which is arriving as we are arriving here. And if you look the babies, you can. It's very fascinating to see how they are moving. When they are babies, when they start to walk, when they run, you see like how is who using own body and what is the quality which the person is carrying. I think it feels that it's something which comes with us as we are here.
Were you asking for specific strategies?
So in a class, you're trying to teach people how to modulate their tone, how to reset the baseline or the background. So like, let's say you're doing something and then you just stop. What do you come back to?
So like the one of the first places that I start, and I agree, telling someone to relax is not helpful. It's like being in an argument with someone and be like, relax. And you're like, no, I'm angry right now. Just don't tell me to relax, I'm angry. You know, and it's a hard thing to access at that moment. So one of the things that I think is a fundamental and a basic that I always start with is teaching people to develop a relationship to gravity and what it means to yield their mass and their weight into support, and in a sense, yielding to gravity, and that will read to the body as relax. And then from there, which is also a state, you don't want to stay in that yield constantly, but you want to have a reference point. You want to know what it is to do that. And then I teach from that yield how to begin to, many things, but engage with the surrounding environment and the surrounding support. So essentially learning how from that yield to begin to push into support. And so that begins to introduce an integrated sense of tone.
From a Xinxian Tuietsu Aikido perspective, we have many key exercises.
Louder, please.
Sorry?
Louder.
Because they started to get
okay, so from the key Aikido or Xinxian Tuietsu Aikido perspective, we have many exercises for training modulation of tone, and also five principles. So one is keep one point, which is to keep your mind in your power. Another one is keep weight underside.
Keep weight?
Underside.
Underside.
Yeah, so on this part of your body.
On the side.
Under. Yeah. Extend your mind. Have a light posture is another one. These are all like translations from Japanese, so they're a little bit...
Wait, hold on. Extend your mind.
Mm-hmm. Have a light posture.
And light.
Light.
Light. Light posture. And this one you're all going to love. Is to relax completely. But it's interesting because we don't just train dancers, we train like everyone. So relax completely really works for some people. So there's five principles. You don't have to use them all because they're five ways to get to one thing.
There are four.
So whatever works for you. These are five principles. And then there are many, like I say, exercises that we can practice. Mm-hmm.
My hope is that we'll get to some of these.
Thing to ask also is to ask someone to do the opposite of relaxing, the most contracting
for the possible,
and then release, and then you have you can compare what's this state and what's the another state. That's a reference point.
There's a concept that Stanley Kellerman uses. He's a somatic. He's quite, right, I'm going to say genius, but he calls it the accordion, which is essentially working with, like if you figure out this is your pattern, rather than telling somebody, like, get out of your pattern, he says, go into it, do it more, like really emphasize, like, and then come out of it, and do it more, and come out of it, and then start doing it in micro moments. And then through that practicing of the accordion, it starts to destabilize the pattern.
Kind of related. I was teaching a time class to undergraduates who didn't move at all, and I asked, and Eki gave me his score that he uses of, you know, go down to the floor in a second, you know, just standing to the floor. Okay, now do it in 5 seconds. Now do it in 10, 30, 1 minute, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. And the students who were just embarrassed to even be standing in front of each other, by the end they were like, oh, this is great. Like they got into their body, they started feeling, like when you have to go the same way down slow, you start feeling all your supports, it becomes impossible to hold unnecessary tension because it's annoying. It hurts too much. And so by the end they were all just standing very effortlessly. Very impressive as a for people that don't move.
For me, it happened. I used to do the painting model. So you have to be there maybe 20 minutes, and then there you start feeling the weight of your head when you have it like this. jazz, and it's like, well, how? Why did I do this? But it's, and then you start working with this releasing somehow, and I don't know if it's an extra or not, because in another, well, it's another state. Just
but I also feel like, because I've worked many years now with release technique, and I feel like to the degree that I've started to damage my joints a little bit, because what happened is that, especially my knees, I mean, maybe it's just me imagining that, but I release so much, and then I move, and my muscles are literally not ready to go in. So now I've reversed, and I actually really start with engagement, so not only for the purpose of a contrast, but really for an activation, for the body to know this can be on. And from there, it can really also just quite naturally find a wanting to release, to find a softness inside of that that is a lot more fluid. And another thing I call it throwing magnets in the space, because I feel like, you know, this idea of falling, like we can so easily connect to that with gravity. But if you imagine that you've got sort of magnets in space, you can work with that release, but you can work across, and you can work up, so you can fall upwards, and you can fall across the space. So there's something that opens an expansiveness into space, and it doesn't sort of go into a collapse mode. But at the same time, it stays really soft.
Yeah, I think this principle of, like, I always like this thermal stuff, that you can always, from wherever you are, like, tune the heat up or down. Because I also feel sometimes people have very different tone from where they go, and it's actually very interesting. Like, I feel for some people it's very easy to tense more and then actually you release. Or sometimes you really release, but it's very hard to. So I kind of really and I realize in both directions you can kind of go forever. So I'm also very interested in how much can you fall into releasing, or how much can you fall into tensing. Like, I think there is always more. And then one thing I find interesting is also to not only think in this range, but also think of where it locates in the body, but also even if the tone change in the space around me, for example, if the air texture change, or if the floor texture change, or like this kind of layers of space also, or can I have a space that is very toned and one that is really relaxed. I find it interesting how much detail, bringing detail and separation. And also, I also realize for me, often I get a lot of this practice, I will first try hard for a while, and I will be like working very hard, and then maybe half an hour later, suddenly I sense it. This kind of, I'm like, oh, suddenly in the jam, I felt what they meant, but in the moment, often I'm like trying to be a good student. This is a question also I have, is how sometimes it's also about delay, and I'm not, like, also knowing when you do the exercise, kind of also making the space for people that they understand that maybe it's not going to happen right now, or that, you know, or that there is a delay sometime of, and it's okay that maybe you try it. Not so immediate.
So years ago, when I was beginning my dance career, I had the good fortune to study with Nancy Stark Smith, and I watched her teach. While I was in her class, I became fascinated with her use of language and the way she would drop an image into the room. And she would drop another one. And then she would drop another one. And there were times when I felt that it was like she put liquid on my brain, and it just like seeped into my brain, and everything changed with one word or two or whatever. I became fascinated with the power of language as a teacher, and how if you say less, and you say it at the right time, with the right tone of voice, the whole room changes. If you too much information and the wrong tone, and it doesn't work, or it sends them in the other direction. Also, I want to say that on a political level, not everybody has the same level of safety in the room. So for some people, just being in the room is slightly traumatizing, or it's frightening. So when you tell someone to relax, they're protected. And so when you're telling them to relax, and if they don't relax, people often judge the people who are not relaxing, like that they're not doing the exercise, or they're not sophisticated enough to do it. And it may be that that's what they need to do to survive that moment. You know, you say, lie down on the floor and feel your weight. For some people, being on the floor is the last place they want to be. Politically, it's like it's not a place for safety or empowerment. So to just recognize that what makes you feel safe and prepared to move and be open is not the same as everyone. So we have to have many tools, obviously, and we can't keep using the same one. One day, and then the next day it doesn't work, or it doesn't work for half the class, but other people are like, I can't wait to get out of here. One thing I say to students sometimes, like if I feel they're too sort of floppy, and I say, what would happen if we became more muscular? And I won't say anything more. If the movement was more muscular. Or I say, what if we all became more athletic? Suddenly, the room totally changes. So to find ways, with the shortest amount of words, to say something and see what happens. And if it doesn't work, you wait and you try something else. Very good coaches say very little. Too much information clutters the head. It clutters the mind. So you want to give them the key that will unlock their physicality, make them free, or help them be free.
And on that tone, and related to what Leah was saying, how do we prepare the space, the bodies, the minds, before we go into an exercise or a state that we want to propose? And on a political level, it's maybe problematic, I don't want to call safe space, because it immediately creates assumption that the other spaces are not safe. But like, how do we, at least on a minimum level, that we make sure that everybody is fine with what we are ready to propose? And also physically, how do we prepare? Like, I also realized to work with this material, when we are a bit tired, then the mind does not control that much. Like that I cannot really have this power over my body, that I'm composing with my mind, or like directing with my mind, and my body has to react to the things. And this comes a lot after a threshold of tiredness for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sometimes curious to play with this with my students, like to really work out before really specific tuning, toning exercises.
I see, so get them tired first.
I think also in relation to, it's not tiredness, but this hacking nervous system, like putting inputs, like ta 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 ta, and then at first you start with one input, or for example like something like this, and you have to go with that, or la la la, and then you start like putting this input like fast, like with less time between them, so then you start to, the body starts like to pop. Something that is not a lot on thinking on the form, rather it's because I have also the feeling that many tensions come with thinking on form. When you go to propose a particular I don't know, exercise or whatever. So there is an image of a form,
mm-hmm.
and I think tension or not has to do with the image of the form. So things like this that do not have a form specifically work like through, you know, somehow. So this is one thing that for me was interesting, and another thing I did with Asaf Tafka once, he came to a jam with a lot of things to eat with different textures. So they were there like you could go and pick one up and taste it, and then you enter like first a solo with this texture and this idea of what is to be that. So it also creates a really a range of, I would say, experiences, qualities, yes. For me, it's interesting this way of going to this, like, somehow indirectly, because it's tricky for me. I was thinking, I don't know, this, like, a reference state, like, to then when you leave, what is the state you go to? So, I don't know. It's like training. It's nice, like, to make these things appear, and then there is a memory that you can trust, the memory of the body that would come. I don't know.
I had a question for myself. Why? What is the sense of modulation and tone for what?
Mm-hmm.
And because I heard a lot of proposition, but what is the goal of modulated tone? And my response was not to teach, but to dancing, to an activity of dancing. And my response was maybe if I dance with someone, I am already organized in my tone. So I have a strategy, maybe not for myself, but for what sort of communication I want to have with someone else. And if I dance with someone very muscular, maybe I am already in the same way of the people, the guy, the woman. So if I close my eyes, maybe I can open a new way to organize myself, to have a communication with someone, dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one strategy. Just my question, why modulate tone?
Yeah.
What was the question?
Why modulate
tone? And the response is maybe
communication. I would say that our language when we dance contact is to, with dialogue, with modulation of tone.
Mm-hmm.
It's our language, very basically. It's not the touch, but it's through the touch, it's modulation of tone. That's why when you are very fine with the modulation of your tone, you can have very subtle dialogue with someone.
It's if someone gives you a clear intention, and the level of tone, the eye, maybe it's also okay. Yeah, okay for receiving.
I think on a practical level, whether you're playing tennis or doing judo or dancing contact, like to be able to modulate tone is to be able to move efficiently. You know, if you're moving with a lot of tension in your body, it makes you very rigid and, it's an efficient way to move is to move with the least amount of tone.
Yes. However, we're not just doing functional activity, we're doing aesthetic activity.
Yeah.
Mm.
So sometimes having a lot of extra tone is something to play with because creatively it's interesting.
So it's like a painter's brushstroke.
Yeah, exactly.
Same motion, but with a different quality.
If your sort of baseline sort of proposition is efficiency, then it sort of creates the color of your movement. And sometimes I try to be purposely non-efficient, just to know what it's like to not do that. And also to understand what the effect of that efficiency biomechanical mindset does to my dancing and my awareness.
But you're also coming from a place of being able to access that
exactly.
efficiency.
Yes, of course.
So, I mean, it is, yeah.
Mm.
I'm totally with you. Like, I feel like we need to know how to be efficient, but that is not everything.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
To master it so that we don't become a victim of it.
Exactly.
I have a question, because now I come back on something I discussed with other people before, is what is it for English or American people, the word tone, because in French, tone is a neurological connotation. It's really something neurological. And for us, it's something which has to see with the neurological feedbacks, with receptors, and all this kind of stuff. And it looks to be something more open in the UK or in USA, or something which includes mechanical. So I don't know, I ask to you, what is tone for you, the definition? Because for us, if we use the word tone, tonus in French, is it's a neurological term.
We use it. It depends in which science, but in psychology or in a lot of tonuses, there is no connotation or it's not the main. For me, it's not the main.
In medical and osteopathic and all this kind of word, it's neurological word. So we use it with a reference of.
The connotations when I try to teach the word tone to students is musical tones, and don't lose that tone of voice with me. That tone is conveying your emotions, and especially your dislike of someone. It's very,
But it's interesting, this is connected somehow with tone and energy. What is the energy inside the tone? So it goes somehow deeper, behind the biology and physiology. Like, what is the energy source inside the tone?
The reason we're having this rub is that the scientists don't agree.
Mm.
So it's not like there's one answer to this. Mm. I did lots of research. I spent 2 years just researching everything I could about tone, and I came away feeling like, oh my God, no one agrees. There's so many different, it's a versions of this.
Mm.
So, but for sure, this this physiological, biomechanical aspect of the biotensegrity, where you're balancing tension and compression, I think many of you know this principle. It's very common, it's very much in fad. That's the biomechanical. It can deform and then it can pop back to its original shape. It can dissipate force. That's what tensegrity does. It takes force and it spreads it out so that you don't get hurt. And when you get local force transmission, when force gets concentrated in an area, that's when we tend to get hurt because we can't dissipate it. That's the biomechanical part. But the neurological part is the excitability, the dampening or the excitability of the nervous system. So Nikolai Bernstein talked about, he used the image of the wick of a candle, you know, those old lanterns, where you could turn it up and we'd get brighter flame, or you could turn it down and we'd get much smaller. That's what the tone level does. It controls the excitability of the muscles. So, Does that accord with your neurological idea?
Yes, that's right. For me, it's very clear what you said. But we have, in fact, to define the word when we speak about tone. We have first, I think, to say to people, for me, tone is that thing. Because it, when we have a conversation with some people, we are not at the same level and we don't understand each other. So just we have to give our definition and then we can understand and have a dialogue, something clear.
Yes.
I'm not sure that maybe I help a little. How is your name?
Michelle.
I'm not sure, but maybe I help a little. I do often an exercise to my students in couples. One is lying down, like no tone, and the other does the eight, not the six spirals. How many?
Helix.
Helix, the eight helix, one from the head, one from the other hand, then return from the back.
What?
Helix.
The helix, double helix. Sorry. On the back, four options on the back.
I can understand things.
Yeah. The eight, yeah. Two of which limbs. I forgot my English, I don't know. Anyway. And the first part is that there is no tone. You're like that. Then you range your volume up your tension in your muscles, and you say, okay, put 10% of your tense, of your muscularity, 10, and then 20, and then to the 100, but you do it yourself, and then go back.
But the other
point is that maybe you are interested in, but when you are doing the exercise and some other exercise that you have already said, you just do the exercises. When you dance, you go more to the place that the guy beside you said, that you see, you dialogue, you get in deal with what the other is giving you in order to deal with the forces, and then you create your tension spontaneously, let's say. Having done all the exercises and getting more experience, the more experience that you become, I think, then you forget all the exercises that you have done and the nervous system somehow reacts and maybe finds ideas from your childhood and from the way that you have already built your muscularity while you are growing up, and then you remember everything. And let's say, as we are intelligent from somehow, somewhere from our base, or not from our hands, and not from our education, we finally volume up and volume down our muscularity and our tone. But I don't think it's like the breathing. Finally, we can't organize our breathing, or we can't organize our tone while. Consciousness.
Well, you can, but it's not meant to function that way. Mm. It's very inefficient.
Yes.
It's meant to happen automatically.
That's what I wanted to say.
So you see something frightening that's coming towards you, you mobilize.
Yeah.
You don't think, oh, I should get organized.
And you forget everything.
So the goal is not to be in your cortical brain managing this. It's not efficient and it's not healthy to do that. But indirectly, you can affect it. Through the use of intention, imagination, and through the memory of doing things like the small dance. There's so much that you can use. So I don't know how many of you know the instructions of the small dance, but like one of the most beautiful ones is where Steve says, make a gentle reach with your hand towards the floor. And then he says, can you make it smaller? And then he keeps saying, can you make it smaller still? And then finally he says, what's the smallest don't know if I'm reaching or not. And that's, I call it the shimmering edge of sensation and imagination, where I'm not sure whether I'm imagining it or what I'm doing, but I can feel it. I can feel my body shifting in time. So when he says, imagine, so don't do it, you're about to take a step with your right foot. Your arm through your sleeve and your hand is like that, the sleeve of your jacket, it doesn't work. You have to reach. Well, it's the same thing when you go to shake somebody's hand. You don't like...
some people do.
Yeah, some people. But that sense of just the gentle reaching and the readying to pull, that's setting the tone. And that's an intention.
Mm-hmm.
And so having practices is, how could I do what I'm doing with less effort? Or what's the least amount of effort I need to do what I'm doing? If I'm boxing, you know, I need a lot of tension, but I can't be too tense because I have to move to be able to duck. Yeah. I remember Louise Le Cavalier talking about she injured her hip and she couldn't do ballet class. And so she started boxing. And she said that she felt that when she went on stage, it was like stepping into the boxing ring. And so when you go on stage, like, you're ready. You're not just like, you know, the goal of is not to be maximally relaxed. And yet you don't want to be overly tense. So it's just like putting yourself in different situations and changing. So like if you say, okay, I want to, on the count of three, we're going to run. You know, you feel like you get ready. You don't start with like, and then you start. If you want to dunk a basketball, you know, you want to, you wouldn't be like, you'd be much more energized. But if you went to touch a baby, you wouldn't touch them like a boxer. You would touch them like a mother. You would be soft and sensitive. And so I just wake people up to that and to get them to practice how they approach people or maybe even just to think about it. And one thing I say to people is, when you're dancing, can you allow the tonic function or the small dance to reveal itself inside of the dancing? So I'm doing something and I have this memory of no unnecessary attention. Just like let it all go inside of the dancing. So I don't stop dancing, but I try to feel that quality that I had in the small dance while I'm moving. So like little pockets of that, just to remind them. I don't know. Should we do some moving soon? Because I feel like we're gonna. Yeah. No.
When you were talking about this example of more sport, or I think it's always for me. I really feel always like. Both seem kind of paradoxically together. Like, I think when you need to have a really strong tone, you need to also have on the other side really relaxed. And the opposite, to be totally relaxed, you also need some. So I think sometimes so to find exercise when even you go very, very, very soft, how can you keep this other side alive also? That it's not a dead end and then you don't know how to, you know what it is. It's both inside, and they can just rise, but I don't know, this idea of... They always feel very paradoxical to me, like paradoxically together.
Yeah.
What I find so interesting about it just now is that it sort of, it comes together with a very with a certain kind of desire, because if I really want to be with you, I do both.
Yeah.
So then I really want to be with you, because it's you, so I'm also really receptive, and I reach. And I feel like often I use this sort of technical preparation to recall that, and then I can actually connect to people in that way. And that's a bit weird, isn't it? It's just
try to steer. I have many times in class where I'm working specifically on skills, but more often than not, I am trying to orient people to situations where they have to solve problems. You have to figure things out, and I give them chances to practice those situations, like changing levels. And I don't say this is the right way to do it. I just say, what happens when you go from this level to this level? What happens when you go to this, or this to that? And what I often will say is, when they're dancing, is just notice what's perceivable. And I say, don't do anything else. Just keep coming back to what is perceivable right now. Why I'm doing that is I want to get them out of being ahead of themselves, thinking about the moves, thinking about what they're going to do, or thinking about what they think their partner wants them to do. Many students get really anxious because when they dance with us as teachers, they feel that every gesture we do has significance and that they should understand it. And they don't. And so they feel they're rushing to generate a response. So my friend Jörg Hassmann, he has this expression he used one time when we were teaching together, of just asking students to follow with delay. In other words, turning the wick down on the candle so that you say yes, but you just wait a moment. Millimoments, it's very small, but to not immediately feel that you have to react to everything that's happening instantly.
This reminds me of an instant composition tool, which is inhibiting.
Inhibiting.
And which is really interesting, not only because it's doing less, but it's also because it makes you realize what would be your first intention, what would be your second one, would be your third one. And for example, if the exercise is take your third intention and do it, so what is the first one and what is the second one? And then it's getting awareness from this intention. And it makes me think about this.
I have a, just in your research, Chris, when you were looking into tone, I'm curious if you came upon in music or in an auditory way, the notion of tone deafness and what is missing there, like what is someone not hearing? Because I certainly feel I encounter dancers who I consider to be tone deaf.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious.
Well, Eleanor Gibson, who J.G. Gibson and Eleanor Gibson were the founders of ecological psychology, and Eleanor was the grandmaster of perceptual learning. And she talked about perceptual learning as learning to differentiate between things. And the more your skills you are, the finer the distinctions you're able to make. So someone who's tone deaf has very little ability to distinguish, you know, here's a tone, but there's millions of tones in between, and they can only hear that level of difference. It has to be hugely different for them to hear it. So maybe you just work to try to get them to perceive more subtle differences. And it's not that you're trying to get the right perception. You're practicing noticing subtle differences. And over time, you'll figure out what those differences mean, why they're significant or not.
I was going to say, one of the instructions that I like the most is that you decide the meaning of what I'm doing. That there's 30 possibilities.
Yeah.
So I could be asking for support, I could be trying to push you over, I could be asking you to push back, I could be asking you to slide, but whatever you do is what I meant in contact. And so just to really break that sense of reading someone's intention, like, no, you're not reading it. You get to choose what they mean, and they choose what you mean all the time. What makes you better, if there's a better, is that you do it in finer and finer increments.
So what about those situations, you've all been in there, you're dancing with somebody and their tone is really intense, it's hard, and they're you feel like you're getting carved up like the Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah.
You know, really, it's intense. And so you're like, you're softening, you're doing all kinds of things without talking to try to get them to change the dynamic, the tone, and it doesn't work. What do you do? I mean, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you try to teach your partner how to change through the dancing?
That's strategy.
Yes.
Sometimes.
That's strategy.
There's strategies.
Yeah. That's right. Like, you can offer your partner, like, really good support, and that just disappears. And they start to realize that, shit, this isn't efficient. I'm falling flat on my face here. So
wake them up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there, now it's gone.
You can differentiate between horizontal and vertical weight exchange and teach the students to only give horizontal weight and how to not meet the whole weight they're receiving but partially move away so that the other person has to soften up just to narrow the base and move their feet as their center moves down, otherwise they fall. Mm-hmm. So to learn how not to take vertical weight.
Sorry.
I was talking about in a jam, where it's an improvised situation and you're dancing with somebody and you're starting to feel like, okay, it started out with a really intense athletic tone and then you're like, I don't want to do this anymore, I want to change.
I've done this in a jam today.
Yeah. But when they don't, what if they don't? They're like insistent, like they will not change. Yeah, of course you can always say, I'm done.
Yeah.
You can show what is no tone at all. So you can
relax. No, but you get someone on your back that's heavy, that has happened. Relaxation doesn't always work.
You become the under dancer for the high tone. Body.
Your lower tone is not noticed.
Yes, but in that way, this person understands he dances alone, not with you, because you are off. So it's just maybe a response to see you thought you had a partner, but I was not your partner. Like you said, you dance on me. This person is dancing on you, so maybe if you stop anything. This person realized he's dancing alone,
they might be used to the feeling of dancing alone because someone who doesn't perceive the reactions of a partner is dancing alone.
But then you act something.
I think that for me that is too passive, and I could injure my back. So I just choose to. I've done this today. I choose to move from below the person to this relationship, because any way that's coming onto you, you can always, if you're fast enough, you can always meet it and still be a partner and give support, but it becomes more like it becomes closer to a fight situation, which quantum improvisation also has an element of that.
Mm.
You know, it becomes an opposition of some kind.
I think this happens when I play to modulate and I try to keep the attention to my partner about this play. It becomes I change my tone, so the person wonder what happens, and sometimes the person is happy to find something different, and she wants to go on with that, and we go on during a moment like this.
I would dance faster.
Mm-hmm.
Faster.
You dance faster.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I could do the opposite totally. Really go in slow motion.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you all have done this. You all have an experience of this. I think sometimes as teachers we need to help those people who have one way of preparing to dance. And it's the same for every dance, and so their tone doesn't change. Just to make them aware that that not only are there other possibilities, but that way of like monotone preparation, it's that preparation is not calibrated to what's happening. It's predetermined based on the previous situation, That's non-adaptive. It's not tuned to what's happening now. And that's what you want to encourage them to do, is to keep, to be able to change their baseline. So if my baseline is, I'm injured today, I have to be very careful. That's different than the day when I feel like I can just do anything, you know. Or maybe I'm tired and I'm like, so to just, that there is not one way to prepare to do contact. There's an infinite number of ways. And in the span of a dance, when you're starting to get tired, you're changing. You need to change. Like when someone's holding on to an athletic tone, but they're getting exhausted, that's when they get hurt. Like if they don't slow down and change and listen to their body, then they're just not in tune with themselves, and they're not often in tune with their partner.
Just to sort of go back, we were talking previously about tone, and we were talking about tension and relaxation and, you know, all these things. I don't think coordination was mentioned, and for me I feel like coordination is a mixture of all those things kind of unified in an efficient way.
Maybe also connection with the effort, how much effort is used. But I think, it's very interesting because there can be people who have strong tone but still they have very good movability. So what is the, I don't know, it's like a big picture, like what is the tonus, movability, efficiency of the body. And what was the thing for me, because I just don't enjoy in my body the sensation of tension. I just don't like how it feels. So then I'm organizing my way, body that feels good for me. I'm dancing inside it or dancing inside me. But I was once speaking with one dancer, he was not contact dancer, but he said, when I feel tension in my body, I feel alive.
Exactly.
And this was totally, it's because I was thinking, oh, this release is good and as low effort as possible. And then I hear in front of sauna this man saying, when I feel tension in my body, I feel alive. And it really swapped. So just not looking at it as negatively, but maybe we enjoy different sensations in our body as well. So I just would like, and then I felt like this, I would like to, of course it's different how you can sense and connect with the tone or effort, but that we have personal freedom also, that is like, oh, I'm so stiff, I will be judged here. That there is still personal space, how I am inside my body, and I think we everyone develop our own way, how we are inside our body and how we communicate through it.
Yeah, I'm thinking on the same, like coming back, I think, to Patrick's question, like why are we talking about this, and why, not talking about, but why is it interesting to work with this range? For me, this is this tricky thing, because I think it's related with what you're saying, like then there is only one form of dancing contact improv, maybe or not, but that this cuts a lot of possibilities, like for me it's like wide range, this is my own experience, wide range to be able to play with. But not in a sense to be able to dance better. What is to dance better, you know? Like, I think it's a, and it has to do somehow, I think, with this word of intention, or like, what is the intention we are putting to this we are talking? Yes. Like,
I just want to say that obviously, we've done a lot of talking, a lot of words, and it's very conceptual at this level. And that I don't want to be managing my tone all the time. So I want to, so often, like in the underscore, I don't know how many of you have ever done that, but one of the practices in the underscore is to have a C. Do you all know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
So a C is like, like I'm in, or I've often been in Nancy's sort of small underscore group in Florence where we live, And so we often will start with a seed. Somebody will come, and sometimes we all have our own seed, which is an idea that from which we are starting. It could be, today I'm going to focus on duration. Or today I'm going to start with noticing the space between myself and others. Today I'm just going to...
not to have a seat.
Yeah, I'm not going to have a seat or whatever. I'm going to not think of Donald Trump. Yeah. That's my seat. Anyways, that to encourage them so that I don't have to do it for everyone. Like I do it in my classes. I set the tone. But ultimately, I don't want them to have to come to my class to have someone set the tone for them. I want them to do it for themselves. So that when they go into a gym, they prepare themselves for what they're about to do in a way that works for them. And then they try it, and it doesn't work, so they try a different way. And so they get in the habit of, in a way, designing their preparation, setting the tone for themselves that's connected to how they are doing today, not assuming that every day, it's Nancy calls it a come-as-you-are party. Well, I have to know, who am I today? I can't assume I'm the same as I was yesterday or even this morning. So I have to feel, where am I starting from? And then from there, I like to have some little attentional anchor to come back to. Mm-hmm. I often forget it very quickly, but when things settle down, it comes back. And I ask myself, is it still useful? Yes, so I keep going. If it's not useful, I let it go. And I maybe come up with another. And these are practices, I call them sub-scores, that I do, and I've done them for years, so that all I need to do is just like touch it and it's activated, because I have a lot of research behind it. So I don't have to stay in a cortical place, I just activate it, and then it's like, I have all that research that it sets the tone.
That's the importance of repetition.
Exactly. Practice.
And so essentially, your scores are a little bit like those principles.
Yeah.
They're just something that you come back to. You forget it, you practice, and then you come back.
So, just to give you some sources, if you want to research this more, Nikolai Bernstein, an amazing neurophysiologist, wrote a book called On Dexterity and Its Development. And he talks about the brain and the base level of the brain, the most primitive level, is the tone level. Hubert Godard, mm-hmm. The tonic function, it's amazing work, very connected to Bernstein. The small dance, this guy, Dmitry Uznatsi, I'm probably saying it terribly wrong, but he is the father of this type of psychology called the psychology of set.
Psychology of what?
Set.
You can write his name, please.
Who's not...
Right, please.
I think that's it, but I'll find it and I'll send it to you. But if you just Google psychology of set... he was in Russia. There was a lot of research done after World War I and during World War II because there were many, many soldiers coming back completely traumatized, and they were trying to figure out what to do, how to help these people. And they were not only the soldiers, but the people who had lived through the war and the famine. And they talked about people who were literally scared to death. Their anticipatory tone killed them. They were so frightened that they died. Just that concept is like pretty mind-boggling, that your anticipatory readiness ends your life. And you think about how many people are traumatized in our societies. It's everywhere. In any given class, you have students that are dealing with trauma. Every single class. And so, one of the things that I feel is important for me is to observe. I say something and I watch and I see how it lands. I don't just do the same thing. And so if it's landing in a way and I can see the people are getting tense or they're getting confused or they're getting anxious, I change. I don't just do my pedagogy. I'm modulating it in response to what's happening in the room. And sometimes I'll just jettison what I'm doing because I can see it's not helping. It's actually creating problems. So to be willing to let go of your material and, or to change, find new words or change the way you're speaking, whether you slow down, change the pitch.
What was the book by Hibakura?
He doesn't have a book, actually. If you read French, there's a lot you can find. Romain can...
Le geste de la perception, it's a... But this tone from Bergerat comes from Henri Vallon. He's a psychologist from Belgium. So he was the guy who developed these two... There's a postural... tone is the same site for postural activity and expressive activity. Bergerat takes this, but it comes from this, the father of the psychomotricity. It's Henri Vallon, which is very good to read also.
How do you spell his last name?
W-A-N,
also writing
paper for everybody. It's W-A-L-L-O-N.
I think also my wife is writing notes, so... Yeah. I think I'd be available to everyone maybe. Malaka?
No, it's all for me.
So one of the things that when I was... So I didn't know Bernstein at all before I did some research on Godard. And when I found Bernstein, I was like, how come Godard never talks about Bernstein? Because he's talking about exactly the same thing. And Bernstein was 50 years earlier. And I think he's even earlier than this guy. I'm not saying he's the first. I'm just saying, particularly in Russia, there was a tradition of studying this. But Bernstein, he really talked about this a lot, and he studied it as a researcher. And I'm sure there are other people as well. So I just want to say Godard did not invent this, nor did... a lot of people have been working on this for years. And so... There's a lot, but those are some resources you can, and I'll send you if you want. There's a new article by Michael Turvey. He's a very well-known ecological psychologist and a movement expert, and he's calling into question the neurological aspect of tone. He basically, after all of his research, feels that it's actually biomechanical. It's actually the elasticity of the fascia, and that it actually isn't neurological. I don't agree with him, and we've argued about it, but so there is no total agreement. But we know from dancing that what we say to ourselves or what someone says as a teacher changes the tone. We know it.
Absolutely.
So I don't need the scientists to tell me that that's true. But I just want to be clear that there's tension in the scientific community.
And in the talk also, like the walking the talk. I mean, our nervous systems resonate with each other. Yeah. And if I come with a high tone and I'm trying to create a low tone, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Or maybe somehow for some people. But it's really, I think, why to separate the biomechanic from the nerves? I mean, they're in collaboration with each other,
of
aren't
course.
They?
But if you go to physical therapy, you go to you know, athletic trainers, they're all focused on biomechanics.
Yes. But there's in the last two decades, there's a lot of new techniques and approaches that are trying to bring both psychobiological, neurobiological, like all that together.
It's also something, I mean, a lot of healing research and traditions really emphasize how you can transmit tone, that you go to healers to get a low tone or a relaxation or something like that. And so it's interesting to think of contact as this play of resonance of tone as much as it's the kind of communicational way we've been talking about it, where I feel your tone and I do something in response, I might also be actually committing and absorbing tones.
So an exercise that I have taught, and I wrote about it years ago on Contact Quarterly, which at that time I didn't call it this, but it's the touch that makes no demands. Is to learning how to touch someone in a way that's not squeezing them, that's not resting your weight on them, but is actually the touch, it's not like this, but it's the ability to place your touch on someone in a way that is intentionally not demanding and is designed to actually perceive them, to read them. And it takes, to do it, you have to have your tone organized. Because what happens in context, you just fall into your partner. And so you lose it. It takes effort to not collapse into your partner. I learned this from studying Alexander Technique. I was in the teacher training, and my teacher would say over and over, do not grab the person and move them into the right posture. It's to touch them in a way that is actually sensing them. And it's a lot of hard work to inhibit collapsing your arm on them or to squeeze them or to move them somewhere, but to just touch them with no intention of changing them. It's incredibly powerful because it teaches you how to hold your weight. Because I can't do it if I'm like falling, I can't do it. And if I'm squeezing, that's a different kind of tone, but to actually touch someone in a way that is not demanding, I have to organize myself to do that. And if they move, I have to reorganize, and I have to reorganize.
So anywhere you touch something in the system of the person, anyway, even if you are not.
Of course, yes, I am well aware that that I will change them no matter what. But my intention is to not demand that they change in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
Like to support me or to go somewhere. Should we do some dancing? Yeah. Maybe we take 5 minutes.